Ask. Attributes, skills, and knowledge. Brought to you by the PGAs of Europe.
On this edition of the Ask podcast from the PGAs of Europe, we are joined by the Golf and Health Project's Dr. Roger Hawkes and Dr. Andrew Murray as we celebrate and support Golf and Health Week that's taking place just after the Masters has finished. The week is aiming to raise awareness of the health benefits of golf for people of all ages and abilities, and hopefully to encourage golfers, non-golfers and lapsed golfers into taking part in the sport. Today we're going to be discussing the week with Roger and Andrew, as well as getting a bit of an update about the project's progress so far and the work that's been undertaken since its launch a few years ago. Roger and Andrew, welcome. Thanks for joining the Ask podcast today. Before we get into the nitty-gritty, I wondered if we could jump straight in with a rough outline of the project for anyone who's listening who isn't fully up to speed with its work.
Thank you, Aston. Thank you for inviting us along. We're 3.5 years in of this 5-year project. At the end of the first year, we produced a scoping review. We looked at all the evidence that was out there, presented it, had it published, and then decided on what gaps there were and which ones that we wanted to pursue. I'm pleased to say that we have work going on strength and balance, on some mental health issues, and we've come across a number of other projects which are supporting us by doing work which they were doing already. We've been supporting, and hopefully we'll have some results from those soon. I'm also very pleased to say we had the first International Congress on Golf and Health, and I really hope that we're starting to sort of change some hearts and minds, influence some hearts and minds. We had Fiona Bull saying some very good things about golf and the science that we've been presenting. So I feel we're in good shape. And of course, Andrew, my colleague, will tell us what we've been doing with his PhD.
Yeah, just to recap on some of the headlines, the scoping review showed that overall golf is good for health. So it's got significant benefits in terms of golfers live longer than non-golfers. That's the good news. The bad news for golfers is you're a bit more likely to get athlete's foot and blisters, but actually you're 30% less likely to die early, and you've a significant reduction in the likelihood you'll get type 2 diabetes, heart attacks, strokes, some types of cancer. And the other thing is that regular exercise is one of the best things you can do for your mental health. So we know that regular exercise decreases the risk of dementia and depression, etc. But golf specifically has been shown to have a really positive impact on self-worth, on self-efficacy, giving people confidence, increasing social connections and interactions. So that's some of what the scoping review showed. And then actually golf may well also be unique, being helpful for spectators in terms of health as well. So you will actually get 10,000 steps if you go and watch the golf. On average, it's 11,500 steps people rack up. Some people will sit in their seats all day, but if you actually go up and see what the golfers are up against when you're on the course, then again, there's some health-enhancing physical activity you can get from that. And I suppose the most recent study we did in the PhD was actually just trying to work out what are the concrete things that golfers can do, A, to increase their performance, but secondly, also to improve their own health. So we know that actually doing a warm-up can significantly improve your score by about a shot and a half, so 8 minutes is really well spent doing some basic aerobic warm-up, and that could be jogging up and down a couple of flights of stairs, it could be on a stationary exercise bike, doing some mobility work, so flexing the major muscles in terms of your back, your shoulders, and then taking a few practice swings rather than just rocking up on the first tee and duck hooking it left and hurting your shoulder straight away. We know that strategy can, by doing a warm-up, can actually improve your score by about a shot and a half and decrease significantly the risk of injury. Other things that people can do is to play regularly, so go from playing once a month to once a week can significantly improve your chances of living longer, having health benefits, and essentially putting a spring in your step in terms of mental health benefits. There's also the opportunity to walk the course rather than riding in a golf cart where you can, making sure you're wearing sunscreen on the rare days in Scotland that the sun does poke its head out, encouraging others to play. And also, I would say, just actually getting the message out about the health benefits of golf, really sharing this information at scale. So if we're talking to our friends, we can encourage people to join the local golf club, or to get lessons, or to get involved in some ways. And I think that's the key thing. It's about inclusivity. So great to see the RNA leading the way in the Women and Girls Charter, encouraging increased participation and also increased inclusivity amongst everyone. Golf is a sport that can be played from 3 to 103. It's a sport that's got benefits for everyone. So let's encourage people to know about the health benefits of golf. And I think, Aston, it's only fair to say that the World Golf Foundation, the European Tour, the RNA, and particularly the PGAs of Europe, have been enormously helpful in communicating the health benefits of golf. So thanks to yourself, PGAs of Europe, and to everyone else that's shared the word. And please do share this information. So please do have a look at www.golfandhealth.org and share that website, follow Golf and Health on Facebook, or Golf and Health on Twitter, and share the information that's coming out here. Also noting that coming up is Golf Health Week. That's hashtag Golf Health Week. So again, lots of information that can be looked at and shared on that specific resource. So that's what's been going on with the PhD. Again, it's been fairly well received. As Roger said, we had the International Conference on Golf and Health, the Director of Non-Communicable Diseases, so important stuff at the World Health Organization, the public health ministers in the UK and up north, all really said some really positive things about golf, about its benefits. It's something that can be played right across the life course and has significant health benefits for people of all ages and all abilities.
Roger, Andrew alluded to what you said as well before about the consensus of golf. Obviously, that's been a real big milestone for the project, but not just for the project, but for the recognition of golf on a non-golf international scale. Can you just give us a little bit of an overview about, you know, just how important that recognition has been by organisations such as the World Health Organization?
Yes, I think as the work we did on the consensus document allowed us to write some very interesting infographics showing how you can maximize the benefits of golf and reduce the risks, and not just to the individual, but to golf management, and even more importantly, to policymakers. And I think we've drawn to attention to policymakers that they should perhaps be looking at golf, which has spent some time and effort in producing some science which will allow them to make some judgments and perhaps encourage people to play golf where they didn't before. Andrew mentioned that golfers seem to live long. That's not perhaps not surprising with the physical activity, but we're also recognizing that social interaction is an important factor in terms of quality of life and has a bearing on longevity as well. And we've been able to present this evidence over these last couple of years.
Brilliant. And those infographic documents and the action points are all available to download from the Golf and Health website as well, and are open access and free to use across different platforms for anyone out there who wants to use those, along with the other Golf and Health resources that are available on there as well. We'll now turn to Golf and Health Week. It's an activity that's designed to raise awareness of the health benefits of golf for people of all ages and abilities, and hopefully encourage golfers, non-golfers, lapsed golfers, anyone out there who might want to get out onto the golf course. Each day is themed, and we'll come to each of those themes in a second. But I'd like to start maybe just with you, Andrew, if you could kind of give an idea of just how hopefully useful the Golf and Health Week will be to not only the golf industry, to so that we can talk about those benefits best, but also in terms of getting messaging out there to golfers and non-golfers.
The Golf and Health Week has a different theme for each day, and the first is fitness. So I think that people now appreciate that golf is a health-enhancing physical activity, so it can improve fitness for people of all ages. But people also recognise that actually the modern-day golfer is a very finely tuned athlete. Having the opportunity to work at the European Tour and also at Open Championships and the Ryder Cup shows the level of preparation that goes into it. And things that the pros do can actually filter down to all of us. So maintaining good hydration, eating the right sort of things before you go out into the course, making sure that you're fueling up regularly while you're on the course, doing some stretching prior to going on, some warm-up. So the guys are typically out for 12 hours or more on a given day, just getting that, you know, the 4 hours of golf played, but also all the things that it takes to prepare for golf and then after. And whilst we might not have the time, certainly the things that Rory McIlroy or Justin Rose do are very relevant to us in terms of those sort of quick wins. So there's a look at golf fitness on the Monday, recognising that golf can actually provide moderate intensity physical activity. You know, it also does take strength and balance, so that particularly older adults get significant benefits, decreasing risk of falls. So the best thing about golf is that there's actually benefits that we didn't realise to start with in the actual project, but are becoming evident with time. So I think amateurs can learn from the regimes of the professionals, again, with the work that they do in the gym, lifting heavier weights so they can hit the ball further. I think, you know, a big thing that's really important to professionals, and they're really keen to talk about, is golf and its mental health and well-being benefits, but also the mental health issues that everyone faces in day-to-day life. And I think golfers are recognising that, you know, they can be advocates for positive health and well-being, and the sort of things that you can do away from the golf course in terms of taking breaks, having adequate sleep. So our pros will certainly sleep 7 to 9 hours, 6 days a week or more, and just keep their bodies ticking over. And I guess, again, there's a lot of quality research that's going on in Japan and France and Australia looking at golf and dementia, golf and depression, and bringing out these sort of lessons. Because I think that GPs are now able to prescribe golf in the UK as one of a variety of activities, getting people out into community groups or into green space, getting opportunities for social interaction, because it can decrease loneliness and improve mental health and well-being. So I think that the mental health is a really strong theme. Again, disability golf. Golf can significantly benefit those with disability, those without disability. It's a very inclusive sport. It can act as a tool for rehabilitation. Recognising that Roger's no executive for the European Disabled Golf Association, but that is such important work, and I'm really, really pleased to hear the progress that's been achieved. And again, golf is for everyone, but I think that people can also take the international consensus on golf and health and work out how they can contribute as golf coaches, as golf facilities. What are the things that will make a difference to the people they're looking after, the people they're working with, etc. So they, for me, are some of the key themes of Golf and Health Week, is drilling down into these in a bit more detail and really exploring and getting ideas. And I think people will, you know, contribute to the debate on Twitter and Facebook, and that's the beauty of these modern day social medias.
So looking at Monday, as you mentioned, fitness, and both from the professional and the amateur side, Roger, perhaps as a sort of baseline, if you like, why is it important to maintain a good level of fitness in general life, not just when playing sport?
Yes, I think traditionally people have thought of golf as being an inactivity rather than an activity. And in recent years, we've realized that you don't have to go to a gym to gain health benefits. And I think that's where we started with golf. We hadn't realized at the beginning that golf is classified as a moderately intense physical activity. And with that, it's likely to have the benefits associated with that, including reduction in the risk of depression and indeed conditions such as dementia. I think that the nice thing about golf is that you can enjoy playing it, and you're able to get these benefits without really any effort. And the most interesting new research that we've been involved in is looking at strength and balance. We said that people live longer, but if we can get them to live longer with better quality of life, wouldn't that be something? And some work we're doing in Southern California and in Southampton is looking at the range of strength and balance which people seem to gain from playing golf, which is associated with a reduction in falls. Now, that work isn't completed yet, but some of the pilot work does look very promising. So that if we can show that people live longer and that the quality of life is improved, plus the social interaction, getting out there in green space, which are areas which we really haven't been able to do very much on, with all those benefits, what a sport we're presenting.
Absolutely. And Andrew, you touched on it briefly just a moment ago, but in your role on the European Tour, you see firsthand professionals out there and their training regimes. And through the performance unit that goes to the majority of the events, you can actually see them in action using the gym facilities, warming up, etc. Could you just give us the types of activity that these world-class golfers are doing as part of their training, both pre, during and post-event?
You're absolutely right, because the difference between first and fourth in a pro golf event is often one shot or a playoff, which is about a third of 1%. So what can actually give you that third of 1%? Because you can go from, you know, losing a tournament to being a multiple major champion just with gaining half a percent. So the modern day golfer is looking at every aspect of this. So obviously there's the golfer themselves. He'll typically employ a coach. They'll get input from a nutrition perspective, from a strength and conditioning perspective, physiotherapy, sports and exercise medicine, psychology, and sometimes other individuals as well, to do with management and travel planning and things like that. The modern day golfer is looking at all of these sort of things and will be getting the right sort of information from the right sort of people. But again, I mean, if you take their travel this week, many will have traveled from Europe. So obviously just making sure that they get there in good time, making sure that they're sufficiently acclimatized to the different conditions, making sure that they stave off jet lag with all the various things that can help with that. They'll typically have played a couple of practice rounds each day. And in and amongst that, there's some gym-based activities. So they're doing stuff to get stronger, to get more flexible, so they can hit the ball further with more accuracy. They'll also typically, if they're going out to say play a tournament day, they'll arrive at the course a good 2.5 hours ahead of their tee time. They'll look to get some fuel on board in terms of some protein, because muscles are made of protein, so you want to make sure there's a good supply of that and carbohydrate, again, to make sure that there's plenty of fuel in the tank. You'll see, and then going through a sort of warm-up routine. So they may well get a physiotherapy treatment, or they may well do their own structured warm-up. They'll then do some aerobic work, some flexibility, go to the range, hit some chips and putts. And each golfer is slightly different, but almost, I would say almost 100% of them now are working pretty hard. And my other jobs are working for the Institute of Sport and for Scottish Rugby. And many of these golfers now absolutely would not look out of place on a rugby pitch if you look at some of the specimens and the work that they do in the gym. Post the round themselves, obviously they're thinking about tomorrow. They're maximising the recovery. They may well take an ice bath. They'll put some compression clothing on. They'll again fuel their muscles with protein and make sure that they're waking up in tip-top shape for the next day. Again, part of their team is the caddy. People probably don't recognise quite how hard these guys work in terms of they're up at the crack of dawn, making sure that everything's in place, everything's covered off. They're obviously carrying a pretty heavy weight, in many cases 15 to 20 kilos around the course. Then they're essentially just working out a plan for tomorrow, and then they're good to go again. So I think that whilst golf can sometimes look incredibly easy, that is, you know, absolutely not the case. And there's a significant amount of work and expertise and input that goes in. So fair play to the players. It's an absolute privilege working for the European Tour and seeing what these guys do and go through.
I think what one key thing is going to be, what lessons can an amateur golfer or perhaps a coach who then passes it on to their students who might be recreational golfers, beginners, or your average amateur golfer, what lessons can they learn from the activities that these pros are undertaking that are practical, that they can actually do without having to employ a team of people around them?
Two quick ones, because I guess everyone will say that they're busy, although we do spend an average of 4 hours watching TV according to the national stats. So 8 minutes of warm-up will save you a shot and a half off your round, so I think that's worthwhile. It also decreases your injury risk by 50%. So a couple of minutes jogging up and down on the spot, a couple of flights of stairs or similar, followed by some actual stretching work, followed by, you know, a few practice swings or ideally a few putts as well. We know that can make a difference. And secondly, don't just go out into the course and eat nothing. Get yourself some quality food that you can take as fuel, because again, concentration can be a key thing. So fueling up can help from a physical perspective, but then also mentally. A lot of the pros, for example, at Carnoustie were saying that 16, 17, 18 at Carnoustie is hard work. So making sure that they're mentally switched on for the last few holes. So two quick wins there. There are obviously a range of other things that are important as well. Essentially, just making sure that you're also looking after yourself from a health perspective. So get yourself out in the course and play regularly. Do stuff with friends. Encourage others to play and put on some sunscreen. There's some easy wins.
Tuesday is mental health, and obviously that's a massively broad subject matter and wide-reaching and many different elements to it. Roger, could you just give us some of the potential benefits that golf can offer from a mental health standpoint?
Golf is a moderately intense physical activity, and we know that moderately intense physical activities both prevent and good in the management of mental health conditions. The Bristol Association of Sport and Exercise Medicine has recently had a whole 2 days on mental health and sport, and this was really brought out at this event. Depression is reduced by 15% if you're physically active. Playing golf can do that. But we know that the social interaction is beneficial. We know that people's self-worth is improved by being around other people. And the concentration that you have to do by playing golf, as well as the physical activity, we know that can contribute to that. The other aspect is people with conditions such as dementia, and there's an increasing number of examples whereby golf clubs are opening their doors to people with dementia on certain days and showing great benefits both to the person suffering from dementia, but also the carers. And often these are people who've played sport in their lives, not necessarily golf. And we've seen lots of good examples where they're really engaged in the activity, both the physical activity, the banter, and at the end of the day, their carers say that they're a different person, that they walk twice as fast to the car park. They wake up on the day of the golf in a better mood. So we really want to highlight this. We want to do some proper evaluation and look at the different examples from Australia, from Scotland, from England, one or two in Canada as well. We want to really evaluate this so that we can give policymakers the information they require to support these projects into the future.
Just to reiterate that actually the information is consistent and growing that physical activity is one of the best things that you can do for mental health. We know golf is a health-enhancing physical activity, but now we've got research that's specific to golf that does show a range of different mental health and well-being benefits. I think that's the most important thing. If you're to tell me that 20 years from now my children will be happy, that's the most important thing. If you told me that they'd also live long, that's probably good also, but I think happiness is the big show in town. So if we can increase cross-national happiness through golf, then that's hopefully a noble aim. I think the other thing that I really like about golf is I'm kind of newish to golf myself in terms of I've always played a load of different sports, but I've just taken up golf, is there's always that one shot that essentially you smash it down the fairway or put it in quite close to the flag or sink a putt of whatever distance, you puff out your chest and just have that sort of amazing feeling about it. And then there's other times that golf will obviously bring you to your knees and infuriate you, but you know, we always live by that one time that essentially we've just smashed it down the centre of the fairway. So I think it brings that. But I guess it's difficult to underestimate the value of happiness. And playing the other day, I actually just took a couple of hours out of the office just to actually go out and hit a few balls. And I came back refreshed and felt a lot better about things. And that's something that we hear all the time. But now Roger and the team have actually produced a lot of original science to back that up.
And Roger, you mentioned on some of the projects that are happening, there's Golf in Society, led by Anthony Blackburn, that all three of us have had different dealings with and seen firsthand as well. And then also Golfing Memories, which is started at Carnoustie or at least up in Scotland and is spreading out as well. How important are those activities in not only generating some good awareness, but actually, as you mentioned, not only providing benefit to dementia patients or Parkinson's patients, helping them by getting out there in the activity and playing, but also in terms of golfing memories, they're actually, you know, not necessarily playing, they're just using golf as a vehicle to engage their minds, as well as you mentioned, the carers. The carers are getting respite, they're also getting activity in some cases as well, or at least just some time to for themselves whilst their loved ones are in good hands.
I think you summarise it very well, but I think what you're also showing is that golf is becoming inclusive. The RNA have had the Women in Golf Charter, but I think we have not always been as inclusive as we could have been. And by using golf for people with dementia, with Parkinson's disease, I think we're showing that we have an open door and that we want to share some of these benefits which we've been highlighting in the last couple of years. I think the Memories Group at Carnoustie are opening their doors to the public. And I think at Carnoustie, they're doing their playing their part by running a golf memories group, which seems to have great benefits and will be part of our, hopefully, an evaluation into the future. Not just at Carnoustie, it's now at Sawgrass, where they just played the Players' Championship. There's a similar group sort of starting off there. And the project is able to put these people in touch with Golf in Society, who are also doing work in this area, and work done in Australia. By bringing all these groups together, evaluating them, I think we're going to be able to demonstrate great inclusion and great benefits for people with these particular problems into the future.
Wednesday is disability golf is the focus for the day. Roger, I think this is an area where you obviously have a clear level of interest and expertise in your role with Edgar. Could you just give us an overview of your work with Edgar and why it's important to you?
Yes, well, when I left the European Tour and Andrew took over, I was wondering what I was going to do next. And one of the big things that came out of a lot of the meetings, a lot of the stuff that we've been doing the last couple of years, is the question of inclusion. If there was one criticism of golf, we were said to be exclusive and not inclusive. And when Tony Bennett approached me from the European Disabled Golf Association, as it was called then, the prospect of being able to make golf more inclusive to help people get into golf if they had sort of disabilities which made it difficult for them was quite exciting. And I think there's an opportunity to make golf one of the most inclusive of all sports rather than this reputation of being exclusive. We know that people with disabilities are a third as active as people who without a disability. And so why should they miss out? Why shouldn't we give them the opportunity to play? And it's a matter of changing some hearts and minds, but also putting into place opportunities. And that's what we're trying to do at Edgar. I'm pleased to say that RNA and the USGA have now decided that we will have world ranking points for people with disability. and in the same way as the elite amateurs in the world of golf. And that has opened up the sport, and that means that we're going to be having major events happening in the next few years, which will highlight the fact that people with disability can play golf. And at the non-elite end will mean that more people will have an opportunity to play golf, have the advantages and the fun that we all enjoy by playing golf.
And Paralympic golf is on the horizon as well. What kind of impact could that have in terms of shining a light on disability golf?
Well, the Olympics and the Paralympics are enormous. And at some stage, I'm sure that we'll be able to join the club and play in Paralympics. And I think we've really got something to show. I think we do have in golf is our playing handicap system, which allows people to compete with multiple disabilities. And possibly we could show the Paralympic world that you can have people with multiple disabilities playing in the same event. And there's no reason why we shouldn't have Justin Rose and a person with an amputee and someone with cerebral palsy playing a meaningful game on the last day of a combined Paralympics and Olympic game. But I mean, perhaps that's a little tongue-in-cheek, but it is possible with our sport.
So, Andrew, what does the research say? Is there research that backs the effect of golf on those people with disabilities?
There's really powerful evidence to show that regular physical activity, again, can benefit absolutely everyone. And there's consensus from our chief medical officers, so the sort of big medical beaks in the UK, that highlights that, you know, physical activity is absolutely vital for anyone with a disability. And golf is a form of physical activity, so absolutely it will have benefits. And I think Roger highlights the increased efforts towards inclusivity and recognising that, you know, golf is a gift that can be, you know, given to anyone really, and that can be enjoyed by everyone. So I think that, as Roger highlighted, some of us are good at golf and some of us are less good at golf. But I think that, I guess just in terms of wider inclusivity, I like going out with my dad and he still absolutely smashes me at golf. I play off quite a large number and he plays off a much smaller number. So I think that, again, it's the sort of sport that we can all play together and enjoy. I've got a 4-year-old daughter who took to the putting green. I've got a 65-year-old dad who, again, enjoys golf. So I think that there's a range of benefits that are there. I think that also there's a really big recognition now that the same things that are potentially disadvantages to golf in terms of access are now being turned into advantages. As a guy that used to work for the Scottish Government and continues to work in public health policy, looking at things that can benefit health for people and populations, I'm really pleased to see the determination of golf and the likes of the European Disabled Golf Association and other bodies really making focus to increase opportunities for folk with a disability to play golf and indeed take part in other physical activities. And I speak with a disabled son myself. I mean, I've got Sonny, who's a lovely wee boy, and if he grows up and is physically active, I think it will contribute really nicely to his development. So I've got a personal interest there as well.
Can I just add one other thing on inclusion? I'm pleased to say that at the Australian Open just before Christmas, 12 players with disability played in a European Tour event alongside and integrated within players from the European Tour. And indeed, on the last day, the leading player with disability actually outscored some of the European Tour players. How many sports will be able to show this off in the future? In a professional event, players with disability playing alongside players without.
So Thursday's theme is all about golf for everyone and shining a light on the many projects and activities that are taking place around the world that are having an impact with all different types of players. One of the beauties of golf is that pretty much anyone can play it, but there are different benefits for different people. Andrew, would you be able to give us a comparison, if you like, between some of the benefits that an older player might get compared to a younger player, or perhaps the benefits that a high-performance player, elite amateur professional might get versus a recreational golfer?
Great question. And I think golf is a fantastic leveller. So again, you might not win the same championships that Rory and Justin Rose and these sort of guys do, but you will get the same health benefits in terms of, like Rory or Justin Rose or Tiger Woods, you're likely to live longer, you're likely on average to be happier, and likely on average to be healthier. So it's a great level in terms of anyone can get these benefits. We might not have the same bank balances and abilities as these guys, but I think that's the thing that, you know, speaking to the golf and health ambassadors, I mean, these guys just talk passionately about golf, about the benefits that's brought them, about the benefits for their family. And it's not just them. And I think that's it. I mean, if you look at some of the research that's going on worldwide, it just shows that part of the beauty of golf is it's not like some other sports that it's actually really tricky to keep going and playing when you're 50, 60, 70, 80, 90. I enjoy playing five-a-side football, but I doubt I'll be playing that in my 80s. I very much hope that I'm continuing to play golf. So I think that golf is for everyone. Golf can be played by the very young to the very old. It can be played by people of all abilities together, and that's a key thing as well. I mean, I guess I probably wouldn't enjoy playing rugby against Fiona Lumu, but I'd be very happy to play golf against some of the, you know, the best rugby players from this or previous generations. So it is something that, again, accesses all. Think of the 18-hole golf course, but there's also 9 holes, golf sixes, driving ranges, top golf, speed golf, a range of different things that folk can try and get involved and try it. And I'd say that, you know, Golf and Health Week would be a perfect time not only to play conventional golf, but try out speed golf, try out top golf, use the driving range, invite friends along, and use it as an opportunity to, I suppose, showcase golf and try the different things that it's got to offer. The older you are, the more you actually benefit from regular physical activity. So it's interesting that some of the leading research is coming out from Australia on this. And I think Kylie Minogue obviously said, you know, you're never too late, you've still got time. So if you think you're too old for golf, you're wrong. You've still got the opportunity to play. And in fact, regular exercise is one of the best things you can do for osteoarthritis. So there are things that can limit us in life, but I'd strongly encourage you that whether it's walking, whether it's taking the stairs, whether it's getting out of the golf course, whatever it is, get out and get active. And I think physical activity as well as golf truly are for everyone.
And Andrew, you mentioned in a second ago about the different types of golf, and you can just be a driving range player, or you can just go and play every now and then, or you can try top golf. And I think that's one of the key messages, as you rightly say, from the week, is shining a light on the different types of golf that people can play. And you are incredibly well known for your running capacity and achievements in that realm. And you've tried speed golf. Can you just give us a bit of an idea of, you know, speed golf and why that ticked the box for you?
So I've got a reasonably busy job and 3 kids that are under 5, so getting around the golf course in an hour is brilliant. I just love it. I love that sort of feeling of hitting the golf ball, getting the odd good shot, and then also getting a bit of a sweat on. So luckily, places like Craigmillar Park up here in Scotland, but all over Britain, I think that there are courses that embrace speed golf and the opportunity for folk to get out first thing in the morning and to get round and to pack stuff into their busy schedule. Also, like, a, you know, 6 holes of golf with my mum and dad or my brother or friends and stuff like that. So I think golf sixes can be really good as well. And again, the driving range, there's a range of different options now. I know that China is looking to increase participation amongst kids by over 500% per year. I mean, we struggle with increasing participation in Europe, but just, you know, imagine that, increasing participation by 500% per year. And a lot of that is driven by, you know, simulators with TrackMan and interesting stuff like that, looking to hit different targets. Top golf, again, is absolutely in the Middle East. So I think there's a whole range of different ways of playing golf that are being embraced. But for me, as an ex-pro runner, I guess speed golf ticks a lot of boxes.
And Roger, you've spent quite a bit of time going around to different places all around the world, not only speaking about the Golf and Health Project and the work that you've been doing, but also accumulating or finding out about different projects happening. Are there any that stand out to you that you've seen either firsthand or that you're aware of that really exemplify the fact that golf is for everyone?
Well, I think there's so many projects going on which support the principles that we've been extolling in the Golf and Health Project. In other words, we're trying to produce some good science which will support the fact that golf may be good for you. I mean, just as an example, at the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab in Chicago, they did a study looking at arthritis and exercise. We know that physical activity is very beneficial for people with arthritis, but it doesn't come naturally. People think they're going to destroy their joints more. And an interesting study compared people using carts to people walking the course and showed that there was no more destruction going on when you walk the course compared with using a trolley. Now, it's very early work, but it's really good for our sport if we're able to produce some reasonable science, some good science, to actually support what we're saying. And I think it's picking up those little projects, well, they're relatively small projects, and highlighting them, which will encourage bigger projects to be done so that in the end we will have really good evidence for the benefits. And as I say, it will allow policymakers then to recommend golf and support golf, which in many parts of the world it really needs. There's an interesting project to do with Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's, I found a neurologist in the States who's not particularly interested in golf, but a neurologist at Harvard University who said, I think my patients with golf seem to do better than than those that don't. Now, she's got no vested interest, so she's doing a study comparing Tai Chi and golf to do with balance. We will have the results of that in about a year's time. And if we can again show that golf is as good as Tai Chi or even better than Tai Chi at maintaining balance and reducing the risk of falls in people with Parkinson's disease, we will have done our job. We will have highlighted these areas where people can get benefits. There are many others, but I think they're just two good examples of where we're of the sort of work that we're following and supporting.
I think the other thing that stands out about the Golf and Health Project is that the RNA and the PGAs of Europe have done a fantastic job in curating the resources. So www.golfandhealth.org has got a ton of great resources and a ton of great examples and bright spots of places that really get it, initiatives that are going on, things that can be learned, what's best practice in terms of how we can contribute to improve golf through health, either as an individual or as a facility or as a coach or a governing body or as, you know, a government or decision maker. So I'd encourage everyone to have a look at www.golfandhealth.org or also have a look at the social media handles in terms of @golfandhealth on Twitter, @golfandhealth on Facebook. So again, thanks to the RNA and the PGAs of Europe for leading on that.
Friday's theme is club level and what that entails in terms of what can golf clubs do, how can they ensure their focus and their activity is tailored towards the well-being of their members and their guests.
Although the Golf and Health Project is very much interested in the science and producing good science and good evidence, we are also very impressed with some of the stories that we come across. And again, on the Golf and Health website, there's some examples of carers, people with dementia, talking about their experiences, but also really interesting and moving stories, such as the one by Stuart Harris, who's recently released his story on iTunes, which tells the story where he was injured in Afghanistan, came back with really difficult mental health problems, and actually found that golf supported him wonderfully well during a difficult transition. And continues to make it to be a big influence on his life now. Now, we don't expect everyone in the world to suddenly start playing golf. But if people see golf as beneficial, they'll realize that you don't have to join the gym, that perhaps you don't need to be so vigorous with your activities, that they might recognize that the social interaction, the green space, is all part of it. And many people will just want to go for a walk, and that's great. We're not evangelical about it, although perhaps we sound like that sometimes. We just want to show that physical activity is good at golf, which has not always had the best of reputations, leading the way by showing how it can be beneficial.
And maybe if I can just share one example of how golf facilities can make a difference. So if you take an iconic place like the home of golf at St Andrews, I was up there last week, and the St Andrews Link Trust are spreading the word about the benefits of golf for health. They're also promoting inclusivity, encouraging increased participation by making sure that there are accessible courses, 9-hole courses, that kids and people of all ability are incredibly welcome there, not only at the actual courses, but at the driving ranges, introducing some technology which people love, signing up to the Women and Girls Charter, also providing facilities for warm-up, stocking things like sunscreen, water and healthy foods, having additional facilities as well as the actual golf, so people can walk on the hallowed turf of the old course on Sunday without fear of getting hit by golf balls. But again, just opening up the facilities with cafes, with gyms, with walking routes, things like that. And also just thinking about safety and sustainability. So making sure that essentially things that are coming to the fore nowadays in terms of pesticide use, et cetera, are minimized where possible, avoiding the mandatory use of golf carts. So I was really inspired just thinking, you know, if one of the world's great facilities and great establishments in terms of golf, like the Old Course and like the Links Trust, have actually taken this seriously and really doing a lot on golf and health and recognizing what they can do, then I think that pretty much every facility and every coach worldwide will have a significant opportunity to improve golf for the people that they look after and also for their population and community through their own golf course and through their expertise and knowledge. Because people really respect their golf coaches. You know, I've had a lesson a few weeks ago and I can still remember a lot of the specific input that was given to me. So I guess if golf coaches not only have that sort of technical knowledge, but perhaps can also give a bit of information to people that they're working with about the benefits that they're getting, which can be an encouragement to keep on playing and to come back to the club more often, I think that can be incredibly powerful.
I think as a result of the Golf and Health Project and perhaps some of the momentum we've managed to develop, organisations such as the PGAs of Europe have really taken this on board and are going to play their part by offering coaching to all sorts of groups and not just the players without disability, players with disability. And I think this is going to make a huge benefit into the future.
One of the key things that came from the consensus work in the past year were these action points, and they were for the industry and facilities and for golfers. Andrew, you were instrumental in bringing those together. Could you just give us a couple of the ideas that a facility, a golf professional, golf club, the managers, what could they do to improve the health and well-being of their guests, their customers?
There's a huge amount that the golf industry, golf facilities, golf professionals can do to maximise the health benefits of golf. I think firstly, we can spread the word. Golf facilities and the golf industry can share the key health benefits in terms of living longer, the physical health benefits, the mental health benefits of playing and playing regularly. So really encouraging people to make golf a part of the routine, you know, on a weekly or monthly or just as often as they can basis. I think also we can promote inclusivity, so really encourage increased participation by having environments and courses and price structures that are welcoming to all, including beginners and including groups that might be newer to golf. I think also women and girls is a key market because we all recognise that women and girls are underrepresented in golf courses at present. But I think inspiring and recruiting more women and girls to play golf and retaining their participation by working out what's important to them, even providing a toilet, you know, 9 holes into the course or facilities to go can be really helpful. Providing warm-up facilities. We know that providing warm-up facilities can decrease people's score, can decrease the risk of injury, keep more people on course, and simple things like stocking sunscreen, water and healthy foods. In addition, you know, so we're not asking people to turn into monks or nuns, but essentially giving people the option of healthy food as well as Mars bars and, you know, chocolate and stuff like that. So simple things like water, bananas, healthy snacks, etc. You know, having multifunctionality, so facilities in addition to golf can actually be additional sources of revenue in terms of gym, walking routes, childcare facilities, a bar, other recreational facilities. So a lot of, you know, golf professionals and golf leaders find that even things such as indoor studios or poor weather type options can be really helpful. And I think also avoiding the mandatory use of golf carts. So golf carts can really provide value to those that struggle to walk 18 holes. Perhaps people are older or have got osteoarthritis or conditions like that. So there certainly is a place for golf carts, but avoiding mandatory use can be important. I think also the sustainability things, so trying to restrict excessive water use, energy, chemical use. But I think in summary, you know, golf is a sport with huge and wide-ranging health benefits. By really talking about these, by spreading the words, by promoting inclusivity, by showing the different ways that people can play golf in addition to traditional golf, by finding routes to get people into golf, we can really maximise these benefits for individuals and also for families, for communities and for populations. So again, it's great to see, you know, the World Health Organization, public health ministers getting right behind golf and the industry in terms of promoting physical activity and golf in particular. So I think we shouldn't be shy and just shouting loudly about the health benefits of golf and then getting out and providing these opportunities to people.
Just to say, I think that when there's an opportunity for golf clubs to develop and sort of change what they're doing, I want to highlight Warmley Golf Club in Birmingham that is going to develop their facilities by selling a piece of land, and they're going to make it very, very inclusive and make the whole facility very practical for people with disability. I think this is a great opportunity. They're doing it for all the right reasons, but at the end of the day, there are good business reasons to be inclusive, and I hope that more golf clubs will take Warmley Golf Club's lead and look at planning facilities into the 21st and 22nd century, which are more inclusive.
Just to finish off, what would be really great is to just get an idea from both of you about what you feel the future of the Golf and Health Project will be and where you think the research is headed.
I think the Golf and Health Project has really shown that sport and physical activity need to be joined together. I think we've always known that physical activity is sort of good for you. We've not really known how much physical activity, et cetera, but not necessarily connected that with individual sports. And I was surprised at the ISPA conference, World Health Organization meeting before Christmas, how few sports actually presented their work. And I'm hoping that the Golf and Health Project will have set a trend where sports are able to demonstrate the benefits and the risks that they might encounter by being involved, and help parents and children and adults to decide on their sport. So I think hopefully we may have left some sort of legacy over that. By bringing together relevant research, we've been able to highlight and move and influence people very much more than just by allowing it to happen by the sort of normal communication. So I think to have some focus on golf and health into the future is going to be very beneficial. At the beginning of the project, leaders told us personally that they had great difficulty talking about golf and health because they thought they'd be shot down by making statements. They've now got evidence published in leading international journals, British Journal of Sports Medicine. They've got evidence that they can now use and stand behind, so that we can stand up and actually boast about the many benefits of playing golf. So I think that it will never go back to where we were before, where it was very little talked about. And I think that the golf organizations will continue to promote the health angle as a reason for playing golf. And I'm sure that there'll be something into the future that brings this sort of work together.
In terms of the Golf and Health Project, I think what we have achieved is science proving common sense. I think it was W. Edwards Deming that said, "In God we trust, everyone else needs data." And to have the data for people, to have the data for the government, that we can confidently say that golf has got significant overall health benefit, is really important. And I think the next stage is to actually see how we got on. Have we collected enough information? What are the sort of next steps? What are people talking about? Do they believe the Golf and Health Project, that golf has got overall health benefits? So really evaluating that, have we increased interest and participation in the game? Have we shared information in a helpful way? And we're really keen to get feedback. So if there are specific things that we should be researching more, if there are things that we can contribute to, some of the things that have risen up are, how can we look more at golf and mental health? How can we look at golf and hip replacements, for example? These are some of the questions that have come in through the Golf and Health website and through other forums. I guess it's also implementation. Now that we know that golf is jolly good for you, how can we get on and actually promote golf as a health-enhancing physical activity for people of all ages? How can we encourage people to golf on a regular basis? How can we encourage them to take up the information that we know that can improve health through golf? And if there are health issues that golfers face, for example, skin cancer, can we just, you know, do the basic things in terms of sunscreen, collared shirt, thinking about the time that we played golf, etc.? So I think the Golf and Health Project will continue to provide useful information through its website, through its collaboration with these, you know, international and national governing bodies, but also learning from golfers. What are the key things we need to do more of? What are the sort of things that we can do better? And I think recognising that although we thought it would be a five-year project, there's so many good ideas and so much new stuff that's coming up that I very much doubt our job is done.
I think we talked about changing hearts and minds. And I think that the idea of the leaders of the World Health Organization, leaders of public health in the UK, coming together and saying positive things about golf and golf science was a highlight. And we shouldn't forget it. And we should, as Andrew said, we should add to it. And it shouldn't come to an end just because the project is finishing.
The Golf and Health Week takes place from the 15th to the 19th of April, just after the Masters is finished, and you will see a great deal of resources, information, content, infographics, videos being shared across lots of different profiles on social media and also across different organisations' websites as well. The Golf and Health website, www.golfandhealth.org, will have a great deal of information on it. Lots of resources about each of the subject matter as we go through the daily themes, and also contains a lot of information, articles and research from across the world about golf and health. There's also a great place to sign up to access resources that are free to use and open source, and you can use however you like. Just visit the website, head for the dashboard and register on there to be able to access those. We'll finish up with Roger and Andrew now. Roger and Andrew, thanks so much for your time and best of luck with the Golf and Health Project and all of your research work into the future.
Many thanks, Justin.
Thank you for listening to this audio article from Ask, Attributes, Skills and Knowledge, brought to you by the PGAs of Europe. For more features and articles from Ask, visit
www.pgae.com/ASK.